fact that even a few people have spoken up for me, to me, it's a lot of progress. The other thing is that I think 10 years ago, there would have been many more people who were speaking up for Nana and shaming her. The fact that so many are at least silent. You know, as women, as feminists, we're just constantly grateful for small mercies. So the fact that they are at least silent, to me, is a big deal. I also think that there's great progress in the fact that Amitabh Bachchan is being shamed for the absolute apathy with which he answered the question when he was asked about Tanushree. And, you know, I'm not saying that Bachchan should be judge, jury, executioner in the case.
Sure.
All he could very well, for instance, have said, she has raised an issue. We as an industry need to look at what we can do to make workplaces safe for us. And people have said, why do you expect a response from Bachchan? He's only an actor. And don't say,
yes,
oh,
I
was in pink.
You, that.
There were people who said, just because he was in pink, don't expect him to be sensitive to women's issues. So let me say this. A, Bachchan is not just an actor, he's a human being. B, that during the promotions of Pink, Mr. Bachchan chose to position himself as a feminist. I don't know if he used that word, but part of the promotions of Pink was a letter he wrote to his granddaughter about the meaning of consent. Now, Mr. Bachchan wants us to see him as a feminist when it suits the marketing of a film he's doing, and when it does not, he does not. So all these men need to be called out, because what is patriarchy if not men closing ranks to protect themselves, powerful men, against women and also against other men?
I can't understand.
What?
I can't understand why an issue which is pink and white, if I may use the expression, doesn't call for a response from a educated human being, whether he's an actor, whether he's a producer, whether he's part of the film industry, whether he's part of our political industry, if I may call it. You see, there is no other side to this.
Right.
What are we talking about? There is no yes and no. There is no Anna saying something and me saying no. There is no vote for white and vote for pink. There is none of that. The industry, the film industry, any factory must be a safe place for women. Is it a safe place? No. Was it a safe place in 2008? No.
Can we ever hope for it to be a safe place?
If enough men and if enough women come out. There are more women in the film industry than men. So, if
not in positions of as many positions of power.
No.
Men
no,
dominate
no, no.
the power
no, no,
structures
no, no, no. Listen,
in all
just,
film industries
just
in the
listen
world.
To me. Just listen. Of course, I agree with you. But if you know, in a household, the woman who actually hassles the newlywed wife is the mother-in-law, right? It's not so much the father-in-law. I don't want to get into. I'm saying when we talk about men and we talk about women, we realize that there is a problem in our society. In our society, I don't
you
want
think
to.
Women are also sometimes the problem. That
complicit, of course. Of course they are. Of course they are. And what I'm saying is that you cannot, you can say, why hasn't he commented? Why hasn't the other person commented? But there can be no two sides to this coin. There is only one side to the coin. There is no other opinion that we can allow to be generated in our society. The only opinion is that women do not find safety in today's environment. And in every section of society, in every sphere of work, we must ensure that women are safe,
and
as she said,
and
weaker
for that
sections.
And we need more women to speak out the way
as well.
Tanushree
the more,
has. Or,
the more women speak out.
Others also to speak out.
Absolutely. The more women speak out, the more the men who are responsible for this will be shamed. They will be shamed. They have wives, they have children, they have daughters.
I'd like to go across to Sapna Bhavnani, a celebrity, a hairstylist, and someone who's spoken very frankly and in fact written about how she was assaulted in your 20s, Sapna, you wrote about in the US. Now when you see Tanushree coming back and talking about this very same issue that she spoke about in 2008, and now it becoming such a big story with we've had some members of the industry speaking out, supporting her, but many have not.
It took me 20 years before I talked about my story. It had nothing to do with the law. I was just not comfortable talking about it before. And that is my prerogative. I don't care what you want to say, as Geeta is talking about. You should have come out legally and you have to come and talk about it when it happened. I would just like to let her know that Bill Cosby is going to jail now. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Because women have stood up now. And that has been years later. So I'm really sorry, Geeta. I really don't agree with what you're saying, that you should have stood up when that happened. And you, Rajinder, I don't even know what to say to you. The point being is, it happened to me. When I'm ready, I will talk about it, whether it takes 10 years, 20 years,
I didn't say this.
However years it. Yes, you did say that.
I didn't say that.
Socially,
madam, I did not.
Well, I'll let you respond to her.
I did not say that.
Sapna's been listening to all of us.
Yeah, I've been listening now for half an hour, but I just really want to say, first of all, also in this industry, why are we always looking for male figures to stand up for us and come to our rescue? Why do I care what Amitabh Bachchan has to say? Please tell me that. Why do I care why a Salman Khan or an Amir Khan has to say about what happened to Tanushree? Why is it that something happens, we are writing to people, male in power, like, please, I'm a bichari, can you please stand up for me? So then it's validated that something has happened. I mean, this is the biggest problem in our country. We're constantly looking, please, Mr. Modi, can you build a safe place for us? Please, Amitabh Bachchan, you were in scene talking to Mumbo Jumbo. Please do this. No. To you, man. It's not about that at all. We as women, I'm not looking for anyone to build a safe place for me. I'm going to make that myself. But the point is, you have to give me a platform where I can stand up and speak and not be judged. And that is the biggest problem we have in this country. We just judge. I'm sitting here, you're sitting looking at my hair and my ink and saying, oh, look at this
Sapna, I'd like, you know, we're talking about whether this is a Me Too moment now for Bollywood, for India.
No,
more women need to speak out. More women need to speak out.
But
will it only be a change if we see something coming of it? In the United States, we've seen people have had to resign. They've been thrown out of movies because of allegations against them. Do you think it'll only be worth something that once we see some sort of impact of these allegations, that some sort of, the industry coming together and maybe taking action against the person losing, rather than the woman, the complainant always losing out.
I don't mean movement as such, because I think it's enough that women are coming out and taking this like, oh, this happened to me, this happened to me. It should be the men who should be standing up like, me too, I did it. I was the one. I have done this. I have molested this woman. They are the ones who should be shamed instead of women carrying this tag on ourselves. Anyways, we've been living with it for the rest of our lives, yeah?
Sandhya, tell us, what made you finally speak out?
It isn't quite so much that I've shared it for the first time. I've talked about it on my blog in 2011, so it's not like I've been keeping quiet about it and was just waiting to get out there. I've been speaking to my colleagues, friends, warning them all off. I think what set it off was, for the past year, I've been trying to make up my mind about what counts or constitutes as harassment at work and what just counts as bad sexual behavior or bad social interaction. I've been trying to make up my mind because there's stories all over the place, right? And I haven't been trying to, I've been trying to figure out where to draw the line, what is harassment, what is bad behavior. And for the past year, the Me Too movement in the West has been just, it hasn't died down. There's every few months, there's something or the other coming up. And for me, it was really inspiring to see how Harvey Weinstein went down. And not that I took inspiration from that, but I think that just primed us and prepped us for what just happened. So when a couple of people were talking about the bad experiences that they had with the comedians, I just said, you know what, about time, because I was in two minds, so I checked with a friend. I said, dude, I have these stories, and I've spoken to everyone about The people that I know have spoken to about these things, but I'm just going to go public with them. He's like, yeah, why not? And I think that's just a little push that I needed. And I said, okay, here goes nothing, you know?
All right, Sandhya, so you shared your own stories, and that led to an outpouring of various stories by various women, young and old, some talking about incidents that occurred many years ago, some talking about more immediate incidents. But what do we do now? How do we harness all this? What do you want to emerge from this outpouring of anger that we've seen?
I'm hoping very, very hard that this doesn't die down with a whole bunch of angry women getting together on Twitter and saying it. I think it's really encouraging that all the people, at least all the people that I have accused of this or I have called out, have responded one way or the other. I'm not very impressed with the responses, but I think the fact that they have taken cognizance of this and have responded is encouraging for me. What I hope to see happen, I'd really like to see every media house just tighten what's loose about sexual harassment policies in their workplaces. Now, there are newspapers that have all kinds of checks and balances, right? Regular HR meetings, regular sexual harassment workshops, anonymous forms, you know, male editors staying back till all the female employees have gone away, and it still happens. And it took Twitter to bring this out. I mean, with such transparency and such signaling of availability and safe spaces, women are still not feeling safe enough to go there and go to their bosses and talk about this. Largely because I think, you know, when as human beings, when we're hit with something like that, our tendency is to just explain it away and say, it's okay, I'll deal with it, I'll have a chat. Nobody wants to go official right at the beginning, which I think is fair enough in some cases. But I'm hoping that will change. I'm hoping from now on, people will take it really, really seriously and tighten all this. So the Sexual Harassment Act, Harassment in Workplaces Act, is pretty vague. I mean, today's the first time I sat down and went through it, and all kinds of, it leaves a lot of things to interpretation. Like, it says within a time-bound period. Now, what is a time-bound period? Should you resolve it within 3 months? Should you resolve it, you know, if you don't have a specified time slot, are you going to take 3 months? Are you going to take 2 years? And am I going to get tired after 2 years and say, you know, I don't want to work here anymore and move out? Or things like the appropriate committee gets together. Now, who decides the appropriate committee? Who decides who's appropriate to be on the committee? So it leaves a lot of things really vague. So I'm just hoping that that will tighten. I'm also hoping that there will be very, very clear lines that men understand. Now, I think a lot of men have heard them say now that they don't understand what boundaries are, and they're just being flirtatious. They're just being a little, you know, it wasn't at work. I took her out for drinks later, all of that. But I think, and it sounds terrible right now, but I think just being afraid of being shamed publicly might make them look within and say, hey, you know what, I've got to pull up my act and do better. Because it's ridiculous to say that, oh, I was drunk, or right, I realized I was married. Did you not realize then? Like, what sense does that make? So I'm, in a very concrete way, I'm hoping that, yeah.
Sandhya, now a lot of this, as we said, there's been a lot of outpouring. There have been a lot of people speaking out about their various experiences of sexual harassment in the workplace, but also speaking about bad dates, bad sex that they've had, men, asking them for sex. And it's all become a little muddled. That's what a lot of people are also speaking out, criticizing, saying that, you know, that you have to draw a line. What is sexual harassment in the workplace? What is it that constitutes this, a bad experience that a woman would have had, and we can't, you know, blur it and treat it all as one. What would you say to that?
So I think I'm on the side of drawing a very clear line between sexual harassment in the workplace and bad social behavior on a date or when you're out with friends. I draw a very clear line. I'm not saying either one is more traumatic, or I'm not saying either one
right now,
is more important or less important than the other. Both are traumatic in their own ways. Both are annoying. Sometimes it's not as bad as traumatic. Sometimes it's just plain annoying, right? Both are terrible in their own ways. But I think those of us who've spoken about sexual harassment in the workplace, I think I'd like us to focus on that, because Like I said on my Twitter some time ago, it really damages livelihood, career prospects, and ambition, right? I don't see why we should ignore a woman's ambition. And if being harassed at work is going to put a clamp on her ambition, I don't think it's a... I think it's a cause that you need to work a lot towards. As far as, you know, the bad dates are concerned, some are bad dates, some are terrible dates, right? It's you want to humiliate and embarrass the man who has done that to you on Twitter. I think you should, if you need to. But bundling that with sexual harassment at work and tagging the police and that, unless you're underage, which is a completely different thing, but tagging the police and that sort of thing, I don't think so. Unless, see, again, who am I to say what's violence and what's not, right? So I'm not going to touch that whole, if it's violent, if it's rape, go to the police. But if it's just discomfort and if it's just really bad social conduct, and I don't think Indian men know how to be charming or how to charmingly ask for sex. And it's really easy to do that with most Indian girls because we just like guys, you know, we're okay. And it just doesn't, it, Indian men just don't get it. So... So I think it's important to draw that distinction between workplace, and this is bad conduct. So if you want to go ahead and shame the person who has humiliated you, who has hurt you, I think you should, because it then sends out a little manual. Now, if you're going around, if a 27, 22, 23-year-old is saying mental health, drunk, entitlement, whatever, if he's saying these things and he doesn't know, he's saying, you know, I don't know what the boundaries are, then here's a nice little manual with all these women have talked about in the last 3 days. These are the things you shouldn't do. Check, 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 you know. So it's a nice little manual. In that way it works. But it really shouldn't really mix up with sexual harassment in the workplace. That's a different beast. It affects lives. I'm a single mother. And I earn for my family. And if that affects me and if I don't have a job, that's a serious situation for me. You know, so... That's what I do.
Right.
Two different things, fight it differently.
What do you think will happen now going forward?
Well, it's not only the Hindi film industry. We are seeing this you know, a wake-up call happening with all over, even including our regional cinema.
Yes, the Malayali actresses, the Kerala actresses,
yes,
have been amazing.
Yes.
They've stood up and
so
formed their own organization.
So this kind of sexual harassment in the workplace is not only, I think, let's not only relegate it only to my film industry. This is now happening, which has been happening, which has been prevalent. There have been predators all over, and women have been taken advantage of, which I think now is a time where women now are saying enough is enough. I think the kind of support that women are giving women, or the media is giving, or people, as I mean, people like Amit and people like Nitin who are there, they're not only women. But the kind of support that right-thinking people are putting into this, I think is just fantastic.
All right. And yes, it is there in other sectors as well, media as well. But I think we all look at Bollywood for that change. Vinitha, now your story really shook up people. And, you know, you've spoken about how it's only after Tanushree spoke that you once again wanted to talk about what happened with you 19 years ago. You spoke about it then. I think a lot of people don't realize that you gave interviews at that time also about what happened with you, with Alok Nath, the accusations that you made, the alleged rape. You've spoken about, and your production company going down, your serial being cancelled. I think that was also a big shocker of how this male-dominated industry could just punish women.
That's true, and I'd like to, before I start saying anything, say that I'm a psychopath turned over to a normal human being again. And I think Raveena put it very correctly that we were treated like psychopaths, even if we opened our mouths, and that's exactly what happened. But what really triggered me to make this move that day, of course, Tanushree's case, because Tanushree, her courage was something so motivating, and it just gave me the impetus to come out. But when Amit Behel wrote his post on Facebook that Cinta will support, and then I saw Sushant on TV saying the same thing, that was the first time. I've been around since 1985 in this industry, and it's 2018 now.
Yes.
It's the first time an industry body and an association that governs the industry got up and said something in favor of a woman. Otherwise, I've been in the EC of the Producers Guild of India. I've been in the EC of the Indian Film Directors Association of India. I've given research papers. I've written long, long notes and given them, like, these are the things that we need to do for women in the industry. And they've just been shown the dustbin. So when he got up and when Cinta got up is when I got triggered, and it was totally impulsive that I just came out. You know, and I haven't been able to read that piece ever again after that. And I'm telling you honestly, because every time I went back to read it halfway, I was like just breaking down.
And in an interview to NDTV, you said that that night was the first time you slept properly for the after years, or for the best sleep of your life.
Yeah, actually, in fact, one of my friends called and said, you know, the next day that I had a really sleepless night. I couldn't sleep last night. I said, I don't know, whatever it is, I've slept for the first time in 20 years like a baby. And I
just
really
getting it was catharsis, yeah, getting it off your chest. And
I just went into my mother's bedroom and hugged her and went to sleep. I mean, it was just that. I only woke up to the revolution that it had created in the morning, the next morning, in fact.
And there are reports that a notice has been sent to you?
Yes, I believe so. And again, thanks to the media, because I haven't received any notice as yet. I'm sorry I'm laughing. It's such a serious issue, but I've got into this mode now. I mean, just I've just freed myself from everything. And yes, the notice should come to me today or tomorrow, and my lawyers are waiting to read what it is and then react accordingly.
And it's after you've spoken against, you know, Alok Nath had that Sanskari tag for the longest time, and we used to, that's how he was treated. I think this generation probably knows him as a Sanskari uncle. But it's after you spoke that others, Sandhya Mridul also spoke out about the harassment that she had also faced at his hands and how it tormented her.
That was so shocking, you know. In fact, I've known Sandhya ever since. She's known me ever since. Mm-hmm. She's worked with me. I've directed her. I've written for her. And we this conspiracy of silence was so grave that none of us ever opened our mouth to each other. We were hugging, we were hanging out, we were drinking out together, we were going to cafes and bars and spending time together, but we just didn't have the courage to tell each other that something like this had happened. So when I read that, I was in state of shock for almost a couple of hours. Because she's such a vulnerable, beautiful, wonderful person. Hmm. Then Deepika Amin, and then Himani. I mean, like, you know, I was just telling Himani 2 minutes before the program started. I said, you were in college. You were in NSD when this happened to you. You know how it changes you fundamentally? The way I'm talking to you today, Gargi, for the last 20 years, I've not been able to open my mouth or face a camera.
Now, you've been following social media recently, and the Great Indian Wedding is all that's being talked about over the last month. Have you seen it, and what's your reaction to it?
I've seen the Great Indian Weddings, the two big Great Indian Weddings, and congratulations to both couples. So, yeah, I have seen them. My reaction to them is that, well, I got married with no cell phones allowed at my wedding, on a beach with 70 people, and we took away their cell phones. And I was kind of not sure about that decision when that happened, and I now feel more sure about that decision than I ever have. So, yeah.
All right, so you took away the cell phones because you didn't want anyone releasing any pictures. You didn't want your pictures to come out.
But so that no pictures out. Also, mere ko koi paisa nahi de raha tha pictures ke liye. It's not like mera koi exclusive, you know, Vanity Fair pictures aa raha tha. I don't know. There's very good paneer at my wedding. So if you, maybe if Vanity Fair is interested in pictures of beautiful paneer, please contact me.
All right, well, there's been a lot of angst over it, you know, about the big fat wedding. Social media people are saying that it's also a big waste of money. So what do you feel about that?
If you think it is a big waste of money, you should be realizing the fact that it is a big waste of somebody else's money that you do not have. So maybe when you go and star in the biggest historical fiction movie in Bollywood, or an ABC series surrounding you, or when you and your equally chocolatey looking brothers release many, many music albums, you can spend your money on whatever the hell you like. But if you see somebody spending their hard-earned money, maybe shut up. Let them enjoy it.
All right, well, okay, Veera, thanks for that. So, Lair, what do you feel about what Veera had to say? It's people spending their own money any which way that
see,
they
I'm
want
I'm a direct
to.
Beneficiary of the wedding industry because 8-9 years ago, I started a film company and we make cool wedding movies. And what I can say is that people of all walks of life in India are very passionate about weddings in their families. It's not just the rich, it's not just the poor. It's an occasion for family members to get together and hang around. And to add to what Dilip said about millennials not wanting to have big weddings, the families I see when film, and I see them at close quarters, the people getting married have no say. It's the parents who are deciding. You know, it's the wedding is for the older generation. It's not for the 25-year-olds getting married. And to add to that about the ostentation, you know, there's a terrible dichotomy in extreme wealth. Because if you look at Mr. Ambani, you know, you've got the yachts, you've got the private jets, you've got everything, the holiday homes. What do you do with it? You can't hoard anymore, you know. You've left it. You've left enough for your future generations. And I think, you know, the fact that he's an A-lister.
Your daughter's getting married. Then
the deal of being an A-lister is that you have to put on a show for the rest of the world. If Mukesh Ambani starts living like the rest of us, life would be very boring, don't you think?
But I think that this industry has grown because of this, you know, rapid aspiration that it's feeding. It's not because of the big fat weddings, let's be very clear. It's the aspirational class which spends not those.
You think overall consumerism is growing in
absolutely.
Our society,
and that
this
is the
just
reason.
Another
it
part
is a,
of it.
It is a reflection of our consumerism. That's all.
You know, people are spending so much on 40th and 50th birthday parties. They go out of town
exactly
for 4 days,
yeah.
5 days. You know, so basically,
so
what's happening?
So we're just becoming a very consumerist
all over the
society.
World. No, it's not consumerist. A lot of all over the world, when people have a lot of money, they've moved towards experiences. So when somebody's spending this kind of money, it's a splashy show of an experience for his guests. So all the guests who are there at Mukesh Ambani's wedding, you know, it's going to be like a wow. So that's the idea behind.
Now, Veer, people are questioning why Bollywood stars are going and performing at these weddings. What is your opinion on that? Have you performed at weddings?
I'm just upset that I'm not performing. That would have been a good paycheck. Yeah, it's absolutely fine. I've done a wedding before. I've done many weddings before. And I think it's absolutely fine for an artist to... if an artist cannot appreciate art at their own wedding, who is going to? I'd much rather do Priyanka Chopra or Deepika Padukone's wedding where it's full of artists who would appreciate my art form than a builder's wedding or dentist's wedding.
All right, well, it's also true, as we've been talking today, that, you know, these weddings generate a lot of business. There's so much involved in the background of a wedding with clothes, cars, makeup, food, invitation, etc. What do you think about that?
I think so. I mean, mera to bada sasta tha. My wedding cost a total of 27 rupees. I'm joking. My wife is going to leave me after this. Yeah, absolutely. A wedding is huge employment. Isn't the wedding industry over 5,000 crores or something like that in India? It's because we have some of the largest weddings in the world. Like I said, the only thing that should be coming out of your mouth when somebody else is getting married is good wishes and fingers crossed. That's it.
Radhika Vaz joining us from Mumbai. Radhika, you've been listening to the opinions that everybody's been giving on this banning of porn websites. And what do you feel about it?
Banning something isn't going to change anyone's behavior, especially in this particular situation. The truth of the matter is a lot of women watch porn. I watch porn, and the only thing I've been inspired to do is, to be honest, is masturbate. I don't think I've ever been inspired to go out and harm anyone. I've watched many movies. I watched, you know, sacred games. I wasn't inspired to pick up a gun and go shooting anybody. Now, I think the bigger issue is, you know, we have to trust people to do what they're going to do, because you can't watch your kids all the time anyway. And porn is the least of it. Now, I get that we don't want situations where children are being used in pornographic movies, and we don't want abuse of women in pornographic movies. We don't want that kind of thing. None of us do. But banning the websites, I don't see how that's going to help anyone, especially, like I said, because a lot of people are using this type of thing very innocently, just for their own pleasure.
All right, Radhika, that's okay, interesting. I don't know how many women will admit to watching porn, but do you think pornography actually normalizes you know, violent sex? That's
how many men. How many men would
women are portrayed, you know, more submissive. The men are shown as more dominant, and especially in a society like ours, you know, just to have that narrative in many of the porn, you know, films that are available. And we were talking about that earlier, whether we can have, you know, healthier porn and safer porn, but I don't know if that's really going to be possible.
And also, you know, like, my mother's a counselor, and I speak to a lot of counselors all the time. And one of the things they were saying is young Indian boys watching porn actually gives them a very misplaced sense of what their own body should look like. Because these are, you know, you're looking at something that clearly maybe is not yours to have, and that can create its own levels of anger and frustration. So there are many different things that we want to protect our children from, and having an honest conversation with them is probably a better way to go.
I don't think there's any debate between any of us on the kind of narratives that we disagree with in terms of the kind of porn that shouldn't be watched.
Yes.
I think there's a different question. The question is there a huge link between this and increased crime? Multiple studies.
So let me finish.
I agree that in the land of Kama Sutra, it cannot be stopped or banned. Agree. Hmm. But Section 292 of IPC and consent sections of IT Act are required, and necessary amendments are required so that it can be controlled and regulated.
So you're in favor of more regulation.
You know, I think blaming pornography for violence in society is literally blaming the symptom and not the root.
Cause.
We have violence in society because our society is unequal and treats women as inferior. That's the only reason we have violence in society.
There are no rape.
Pornography is not the reason for that.
I do not know what kind of India we are aiming at, in fact. And we are simply trying to follow the so-called modernization of the whole thing, wherein there is no respect for the relationship and all those kind of things.
Actually,
to me, at least.
When you were talking, I was not speaking.
Okay. This is it's already started working, okay?
Yes.
So.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
So what I'm trying to tell you, the other thing, clarification which I want to make, in fact, I'm not the spokesperson of All India Muslim Personal World. In my individual capacity,
sure.
I'm having all these kind of impressions. So as far as Islam is concerned, Islam is very specific about it, that we cannot think of any sexual relationship outside the wedlock. And the law is applicable to both the man and women. I agree to this extent that 497, it is really... it is an addition to my knowledge when I went through the whole thing, that only the man is being punished, not the women. To me, even both of them, if they are going out of the wedlock, they should be punished about the whole thing. And the other thing is, in fact, that then there would not be any end to a whole thing, and there would be absolutely.
But sir, you think you need it to be a crime? It needs.
It is a crime. When you are entering into a contract.
It's between two people, and you have a remedy. You have divorce. You can divorce the person who's cheating on you, who's committing adultery.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And be it is the man or the woman, the relationship should go, because they have no right. Because they, when they are having a wedlock, they have a contract. They are breaking that contract, and this, whenever you break the contract, there are some punishment for that contract. As far as the society is concerned, it will be better off, whether be it Hindu or Christian and Muslims or even the modern society is concerned. There has to be the importance of the relationship.
We're not saying that it's all right, but we're saying there's no need to criminalize it.
Why not? It's a civil issue, it's not something that's harming society at large. Then tomorrow there is no rule of law. But it means a relationship, okay. For the timing, I'm marrying. But let me go. Have it there. Is that all right?
Nobody is saying it is all right. We are just saying that maybe you criminalize it. One is okay.
Don't go to the second. Is it all right? Don't go to the third. Is it all right?
What is your view on criminalizing it? Yes, we're not. Nobody here is saying it may not be wrong, and it's something that it's a problem, or people may look down upon it. Society looks down upon it.
Are all of you saying no? It is not wrong. Some people may not. Be careful when you are making that statement.
Shalini, you come in here. You've heard everybody talking about this issue as somebody who's a businesswoman, you run your own forum, a blogger, author. What do you feel about these issues?
You know, it was quite interesting when I was invited to the show, because I thought it was a very interesting topic. So I do believe in the sanctity of marriage, but I think it's invasion of privacy. Because today, if you were to actually look around you, there is societal growth. And 90%, I don't know whether it's 99%, but at least 90% of the people, everybody is having an affair. Let's look around us. Let's be honest. And it's all okay with the laws, etc. But I want to know who are the laws applied to? Because the upper class gets away. They all, you know, they get rich. They get these 25-year-old girlfriends, and they flaunt them, and they're totally happy. And the wives are the trophy wives, and they are like, okay, we are used to this lifestyle. So we're not giving up this lifestyle. So it's all right. Never mind. You know, let's like look beyond it, and let's maintain our lifestyle. The lower class, my God, they just like flip from one home to another, and let's just look at our maids and drivers.
Don't you think that's a very broad generalization there?
Yeah, there is a broad, but let's look at it. The only getting subjected to the laws is the middle class, right? Yes. And it is happening all over the place. Everybody is cheating. Human beings are not monogamous. We are all looking for excitement. How can you make it a criminal offense? It's an invasion on my privacy. It's all right. Sanctity of marriage is my upbringing. I've been with my husband now for 25 years. It's a choice I'm making. And it's a choice because I love him and I want to be with him. But you're not going to tell him if he's not giving me what I want and you're telling me now you do deal with this, or if he's an MCP, you deal with this. No, I can't probably break away because I'm brought up in an Indian environment and marriage is the be-all, end-all of life. So I'm going to take whatever the shit I'm getting, but I'm not going to go and find that happiness outside.
Aditya here with his husband, and tell us about yourselves, and now how do you see things changing after the judgment that's come? You've been living together, you have 6-year-old twins, and that's wonderful, and I believe they're watching at home.
I'd just like to just take a pause. Before I do that, I'd like to just say my feelings about what everyone's saying here about 377, that the thing that's really going to help us is it's going to give us self-confidence. That one of the things that the world doesn't realize is that every gay person has had to live a terrible story of loneliness and suppression of their soul. Their soul is quelled. And something that I loved reading in the judgment was when the Justice Deepak Mishra says that a life without dignity is like a sound that is not heard. And so that's our lives. Till we have the courage to come out, that is why it's so important to come out. And actually, all gay people, I've had a fairly easy process of coming out once I came out to my parents, but for 25 years I lived a terribly lonely life by myself without telling anyone who I was. It totally, and we all did, all the gay people, and there's a damage to your psyche at that moment. And so this will give us confidence that we are okay and that we're not criminals, and this is a very deep wound to our soul that happens by society, by your friends, by your family. So one of the things that's really important is Indian family doesn't talk about gay. They don't bring up the subject, even if they accept you. It's a subject that they don't really like to discuss among. It's okay, let's not talk about it. They're always like, this is something we don't need to talk about. Everyone's here, you know, the HR guy is saying, so-and-so is saying, let's not talk about it. And so I'm hoping we will now begin to discuss. We are as normal as everyone else, and even in my family, it was important to discuss it. So what I'm trying to say is that it's really important for the gay person to have confidence so they can tell the world that they're gay, so other people know that they're gay.
And you feel now this.
And the other people know, and then you can talk about the subject. And so then, once you start talking about the subject, you sensitize the world, and you must. It is the role of the gay person to come out and lead by telling the world. There's a silence equal death. When AIDS came out, ACT UP came in New York, they had this slogan, silence equal death, which is so true about us. And the sound that is not heard, I love the way he placed it, because our lives, our souls are like that. And so it's really important to come out. And Michael and I, we met many years ago when I lived in California. We both lived there in a wonderful town called Berkeley, which sort of leads the way of the world in a way. And we met there at the White Horse, which is a lovely bar. We had gone there to dance. And we met, and we've been together since that night. And so it's very important to tell the world, live openly. And for that reason, once we decided to have children, which was about, we really wanted children, and it's very important to have children, I believe, for gay people also, and gay people will have children. It is our right to have our families, and we will have our families. We won't be denied sterilized adoption rights. And so we need to have families, and we need to live with them openly so the rest of society can see that we're just like them.
realizing it's really the families that reinforce these gender stereotypes. You were the first Indian woman to go to Harvard Business School, and you've broken the glass ceiling in your own sphere, in your industry. Would you, how do you straddle both worlds? The fact that you're a woman from India who's achieved all this, are you an exception?
Well, you know, I can only tell you that in a book I put together, 30 women CEOs, their vision, their stories, the common theme across that was the support they got from family. Fathers, mothers, behind them all the way, fathers playing a very key role. In fact, often we think it's just the mother, but in all these cases, the influence of the father in terms of career, planning, support, were all very critical. And contrary to what I thought, because I came from a family where we were two girls, and I thought, therefore, all the energy got funneled into us. My sister went on to become India's leading woman golfer. I went into the world of finance. So if we had a brother, would it have been different? And in fact, the interesting thing with these other 30 women was many came from families where they weren't just sisters. So obviously they grew up in family environments which were very open, intelligent, largely middle class, well-educated backgrounds. In a few cases, even the mothers working in that generation. And therefore, they did benefit from having the right family background. So the counter to that has to be in just exactly what you're hearing, that so if you don't have it, it isn't working for
you. You're both in agreement. The catch point here is how the family supports you, if they support you at all. Like Indra Nui, I remember, because you know most families, they would say, look, you want to work, you want to be a banker, you want to be a manager, you want to be a maid, you still have to do the household duties, which is what Dr. Ghosh is saying. So I think, you know, that famous story of Indra Nui coming home after getting a promotion, and she tells her mom, hey mom, I got this promotion, and the mom says, leave the crown, leave your crown at the door and go get the milk, or whatever it was.
So
if it's all about the families, we actually have a Madhur Prabhakar here. He's someone who's gone against the stream. You're a stay-at-home dad. That's quite unusual in India. Is that?
In fact, I was a stay-at-home dad for about, you know, till last year. I rejoined work because my daughter is grown up now. In fact, for me to stay at home was, I wanted to kill the bias that here Lena is talking about. I have a daughter. I don't want to set a bad example that women are supposed to stay at home. I'm an equal partner in bringing up my child. At the same time...
Wow. How many of us get that? She's a lucky woman, your wife.
I hope so. So, at the same time, you know, it's funny, you know, as family's concerned, one, we have spoken about parents, we have spoken about siblings. Nobody speaks about husbands. So, husband is very important, you know. Once you actually, as far as Indian culture is concerned, one has to leave home and, you know, I don't appreciate the entire culture as well, though. But having said so, you are the family then. You are the one that a wife stays
the
with.
The new family.
Yes.
She leaves and goes to her husband's home is what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the same time, she just delivered a child. My child was about 1 year old. She was too attached to leave a child alone with a help or perhaps my parents. They are old, you know. I put up my hand. She was getting into depression. I was like, I'm going to stay at home. I have a flexibility.
But she wanted to work.
She wanted to work.
And she was getting a good salary that could support everyone.
In fact, I was when I was staying at home, I was working as well. So I had a flexibility. In fact, I wrote a book when I was staying at home, so it paid off as well. So I wanted her to rejoin office. Because her career is equally important. You know, I don't want her to be my grandmother who never worked. I don't want her to be any, you know, people, my neighbors who, you know, who think a woman should stay at home and cook food. I can cook better than her. So,
if you hadn't offered, would she have quit?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's just a minder. It's a family thing. She wanted to join work, but somewhere down the line, it was all getting boiled up inside her.
Mm.
Because as far as the family structure is concerned, they think that, you know, once the child is there, she can, you know, she can take care of home and all that stuff. I didn't want her to do that. I don't want to set a bad example for my child.
And how old is your child now?
She's going to be three soon.
Okay, so she's starting school, and so you feel you could go back to work full time.
Yes.
So you make it sound easy. So Namita, why can't it be the same for women then? Why can't we take a break, and once the kids go back to school, we should also be able to find a job and go back to work to our old jobs.
Exactly. And why is it that a man who stays at home to bring up his child and therefore fulfill his parenting duty and obligation as a father, such a man is a superhero? When a woman does it, she's just another mom, correct, right? She's not exceptional. She just does what every woman is expected to do. So, yes, it's great that Madhur took that decision, but he's not doing anything different from what so many other women routinely do.
You also, you quit your job full-time because you wanted to look after your kids?
I still work from the house. I never went back to it because I also enjoyed the freedom and the flexibility that working from the house gave me. So it kind of opened a window of opportunity for me. But yes, I was just being another mom because I just found it impossible.
But was it easy for you to get a job somewhere where they would encourage this flexi timings?
Not at the time when I quit, no. I quit working full-time about, I would say, 10 years ago. No. And the first thing that hits you is your paycheck. When you see the size of your check that you get as a freelancer coming home, it's not a good feeling. It's not at all. And we do it very often because we are also secondary income earners. You know, so women, we and just, there's just one more thing I wanted to add since Naina is here, and I don't mean to, so just cut me off when I'm talking too much. Which is that, you know, this whole business of leaning in, and I know Naina has written a foreword for Sheryl Sandberg's book, and I find that, I mean, corporates are, of course, changing. Workplace culture is changing. But I feel that corporates need to lean in far more than women do, because you can lean in and lean in as much as you want to. But for moms, there's a 6 to 8 golden hour. That's the only time you're going to see your children. And if corporates do not change that workplace culture and stop having useless meetings that go on till late in the evening, you know, I mean, every woman understands that there is an exceptional day, she will have to put in late hours. But if you're going to do it routinely and you're going to go home when your kids are in bed, you are going to at some stage say, I don't want to lean in any longer. It's not worth it.
I actually want to go across to Merunisa because she's a great example of someone who's choosing to break stereotypes in her own world. Merunisa, aap kya karte ho?
मैं लेडी बाउंसर हूँ फर्स्ट क्लास विलेज सोशल में जॉब करती हूँ
लेडी बाउंसर
माइक
तो अच्छा ओके
स्टार्टिंग में मुझे नहीं पता था बाउंसर बनूंगी जॉब करने के लिए आई तो पार्ट टाइम जॉब मुझे बाउंसर की मिली तो मुझे लगा ये सिक्योरिटी गार्ड की जॉब है मैंने बोला नहीं मैं नहीं करूँगी फिर सेलिब्रिटी के साथ जाने लगी ऑफिस में मेरा सपना भी पूरा हो रहा था बचपन से एक ही सपना था कि मैं आर्मी या पुलिस में जाऊँगी और इसमें दूसरे को सिक्योर करना होता था तो मुझे काफी हद तक अच्छा लगने लगा और मैंने बाउंसर लाइन ज्वाइन कर ली
ओके तो आपके टाइमिंग्स क्या होते हैं लेट होंगे नहीं
हां 8 बजे से और 1 बजे तक की ड्यूटी होती मेरी
तो आपके मां-बाप क्या कहते हैं आपके मतलब नेबर्स क्या इंडिया में नेबर्स सबसे पहले नेबर्स
मम्मी पापा ने मम्मी ने तो हमेशा सपोर्ट किया पापा को थोड़ा डर लगता था कि मार पिटाई का काम है हमेशा लड़ाई झगड़े करती है कहीं कुछ हो जाएगा तो
लेकिन मैं यहाँ पे आपको लोगों को जब वो लड़ रहे हैं आपको उनको रोकना है ना तो आपको किसी को मारना तो नहीं है
सोशल में इतना नहीं होता लेकिन मैं इवेंट पे जाती थी ना तब हमेशा लड़कों से पंगे होते थे मेरे
नहीं अच्छा तो एक मिनट आप क्या आप जब लड़के दारू पीते और फिर लड़ते आप उनको रोकते हो या जब जैसे लड़कियां को कोई हरास कर रहे हैं या मतलब टीज कर रहे हैं फिर आप आते हो
लड़कियां काफी बार बदतमीजी करती हैं काफी बार ऐसा होता है लड़कियों को लड़के छेड़ रहे हैं तो उनको भी
अच्छा सो देयर मोर स्टीरियोटाइप्स बीइंग ब्रोकन
नहीं तो मतलब यू कैन हैव वुमेन हु आर ड्रंक एंड वुमेन हु आर फाइटिंग एंड दैट्स व्हाई यू हैव टू कम इन
हां मुझे जाना पड़ता है क्योंकि लड़के ऐसा होता है ना लड़के अगर उनके बीच में जाएंगे तो उनकी पर्सनल प्रॉब्लम मतलब पर्सनल दुश्मनी बन हो जाएगी लड़का एक लड़के के साथ जाके समझाएगा या कुछ भी बोलेगा हाँ. तो वहां फाइटिंग फाइट हो जाएगी दोनों में हाँ. और हम जाके थप्पड़ भी मारेंगे तो लड़का साइड हो जाएगा जब स्टार्टिंग में आई थी तब लेडी बाउंसर नहीं होती थी उस टाइम सिक्योरिटी गार्ड रखते थे
और अब आपकी बहन भी यही करती
है सिस्टर भी यही बाउंसर
तो जॉब अपॉर्चुनिटी फॉर द वुमेन ओके ग्रेट सो देयर आर न्यू एवेन्यूज कमिंग अप न्यू अपॉर्चुनिटीज एंड न्यू वुमेन हु आर चूजिंग टू फिल दैट स्पेस एंड यू नो It's not easy. आसान था जब आपने शुरू किया ये
मेरे लिए आसान था क्योंकि मुझे मार पिटाई का बड़ा शौक था